Hi, I'm Ken Carroll. These recordings are provided by ChinesePod.com.
This is a Learning 2.08 conference podcast. This and all conference conversations recorded live in September 2008.
This girl did. We end up with something a bit more remarkable. Her learning log was actually to improve creative writing over the course of about 6 weeks running up to exams. And it was in the slightly naive belief, perhaps, that she could improve from the middle, kind of mediocre grade up to something much more exceptional. And she did. This is the astonishing thing. She started out with one very small paragraph, and then her teacher invited other teachers on board to do kind of two stars and a wish. Two things you want to improve, two things that are good, rather, and one thing you wish to improve. Two stars and a wish. Very simple assessment strategy. Doesn't involve grading work. It just involves giving positive feedback and one thing they could do better. Students need taught how to do that. So she wrote her first part. She wrote her second paragraph and changed it all the time. And the whole theory here is little and often, that doing a little bit of creative writing very often and getting very regular feedback means you will improve over time. That's how professional authors work. They write a little bit, take it to the editor, get some feedback, go back to the drawing board. Over time, she did this until she ended up with a very long story after about 5 weeks. A very well-written story, good use of one-word paragraphs and kind of Ian Rankin-y style to it. Very well-written piece. And 3 months later, when the examination results come out, she lets us know that she's not just got what she hoped for, she's excelled beyond that, and she got better overall. And the reason for this, she was the only one using a learning log in this way, writing little and often and getting feedback from her friends. And that very simple underlying pedagogical foundation is what makes gaming for learning interesting. If we don't understand this, then video games for learning become less effective than they could be. Now, just going to... Oh, I don't want to show this video. There we go. When I was doing podcasting with students, it's a similar story. You get these kind of comments. If you just pick one, these are students learning Spanish, making a podcast about their city. And what you notice, it's this thing of the second one there, Jamie. The trickiest part was recording the podcast. It was a nice change from Spanish. So the nature of the task makes them forget that they're learning. But you'll notice the thing that they find difficult is working together and using the technology, which is also the thing teachers find most difficult to manage in the classroom. Similar kind of quote here. Don't know what's going on today with the old Bluetooth. There we go. One participant struggled with the longer challenge, but they liked the fact that it challenged their weaknesses and rewarded them when we saw improvement. This is from Bournemouth University. It's my favorite task because it offers the biggest challenge. Participating in a group together helped to forge friendships. These are university students. University students studying medicine, having trouble with mental arithmetic, and what technology were they talking about to improve their mental arithmetic so they don't kill patients with the wrong doses? They were talking about Dr. Kawashima's brain training on the Nintendo DS. This is the game that is sold with Nintendo DSs most of the time. How many of you own a Nintendo DS? Just three. Ask your students the same question, you'll find maybe a third of the class has a Nintendo DS. The brain training games that have come out with these, because everyone has them, kids play them and they enjoy playing them. And we did some research in Scotland. The results are going to be coming out next week at the Scottish Learning Festival. And the early indications are that with a small sample, the attainment in mathematics improved a great deal, maybe 10%. But that was with one class. So just mental arithmetic and numeracy. The test that we've just done, we bought 500 of these to do a test across lots of schools in Scotland. And it looks like we're going to be seeing improvements far greater than 10%, far greater than 20% even. So next week, keep your eye open on my blog and you'll see the announcement of the research results there. But here's the thing, it's not a young person's sport. 71% of gamers are married, which means we've either got a lot of troubled teenagers doing things they shouldn't be doing, or doing things they should be, perhaps. How many of you are gamers? Put your hands up. Right, and the teaching profession is some weird side part of society, this closeted group who don't do what the rest of society does. there was maybe 40% of the hands went up there. Yet 71% of gamers are married, and surprise, surprise, two-thirds of them have kids of their own, which is them buying the gaming console for their son or daughter and then playing it themselves instead. It's a new generation called the Nintendads who steal the games of their offspring. One of the reasons we like games is that they allow us to level up. So I've just started really badly playing World of Warcraft, and I'm on level 1, which is pathetic. But within a couple of weeks, I could probably get up to level 16. Now, in school, how many levels do we have to get up to? We've got A, B, C, and fail. Or we've got marks out of 7. Or we've got marks out of 20. 20 is about, or 100%. Most games, though, either have no levels at all, it's just constantly this thing about self-improvement, or they have hundreds of levels, 200 levels, 250, 300 levels. And the distance between the levels is very small, so it's very easy for you to do well at the game. And the other thing is, if kids get ahead of their friends, do they carry on and go 10 levels ahead of their friend, 20 levels ahead of their friend? No, they don't do that at all. What do kids do when one gets a little bit further ahead of the other? They cheat. They tell each other how to improve and how to get better. Yet in school, that's not encouraged. That's cheating. No, work it out for yourself. Actually, games encourage the best collaborative learning that you could imagine in a context that makes sense. So the first thing about games of all sorts, and I'm talking about commercial games that you buy off the shelf, that you can go and buy down the street in the middle of town, is they allow us to come up with new contexts for learning the same things. So you can get the same content learnt. If you really do work within a system that's content, 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 well, don't worry, you can get the content learnt, but you can do it in a far more effective and more enjoyable way. First example is this game, Guitar Hero. Are you familiar with Guitar Hero? Is anyone not familiar with Guitar Hero? Okay, so I'll have to show you a video, obliged to show you a video off YouTube. Guitar Hero is basically a game for the PS. I'm going to have to put this down. I'll turn this one on. There we go. Hopefully we'll not get tons of feedback. So it's a game where... Am I still... Hold on. Computer's going very funny on me there. You have a plastic guitar connected to your computer, to your PS2. And PS2 connected to the television. On the screen, you have a guitar. I'm not a guitarist, as you can tell. You have the, what's it called? Neck of the guitar, thanks. And on that neck of the guitar are color-coded dots that correspond to colored keys on your plastic guitar. So if you see a red one, you have to hit the red one just as it passes a line. So it arrives at great speed. Probably the easiest way is to show you a kid playing Guitar Hero. If I can find one. It's not, ironically, it's not easy to find a really good video of, let's do by view counts, we'll probably find something quite funny. And people take it immensely seriously. So when people, I'm not going to be able to, I don't want to waste time, go on Google or YouTube for Guitar Hero. When you play the game, it's a game of skill on the one part. So you get two types of players. You've got boys and girls. It's very popular with both sexes, contrary to the thing about gaming being for boys. Girls love this just as much. But they're like this above their guitar, just concentrating on hitting the right buttons. And they learn the songs in order to get as quickly through the song as they can do, and therefore earn more points. That's your first type of player. Your second type of player is the one who really goes for it. And it's like this. It's all kind of rock music and air guitar style-y. And when they have power-ups, instead of just pressing the power-up button, they actually do that with the guitar, you know, to look, make themselves look like a rock star. So you've got two types of players. And that's important to realise, that when you're playing the game, there's a bit of drama and theatre. But beyond that, most educators would just kind of go, okay, that's a nice game, fun at Christmas time maybe, during holidays, but I'm not going to use that in my class. Well, my colleague back in Musselburgh Grammar School had a challenge on his hands. Primary school students coming to secondary school, nervous about coming to the big school. They don't know anyone. And normally when students get into that you know, the transition period to secondary school, there's a really embarrassing moment where they have to get to know the senior students who really have no interest talking to these very uncool small people. And gaming was the way around that, because no matter what age you are, the game draws you together. So they did the Guitar Hero project. He describes it in great detail on his blog about how he did it, what they did, how they involved the primary schools. They asked students to bring in their own PS2s so that they didn't have to buy lots of equipment. So they ended up with 10 PS2s set up around the main hall, a bit like this, with all the plastic guitars. And they set up things like, well, they had basically a few workshops. So there was the Guitar Hero challenge, which was describing what they had learnt by doing the Guitar Hero project for 6 or 7 weeks beforehand in primary school, so reflecting on previous learning. There was the Battle of the Bands, which is just what I've described, playing the songs as best as they could, see who could win. But far more interesting were the various workshops that they did. So there was Guitar Hero orienteering. This is a quaint sport that is played in Scotland. I think we're world champions in it because no one else plays it. You run around with a map and you have to go to a certain number of points in order and clip a card that shows you've been there in order, and the first one home with all the points clipped in their card is the winner. That's orienteering. Does anyone else play that? Oh, good. I don't feel quite so quaint. Right. Well, they did Guitar Hero orienteering, which is where they had to go around the school picking up clues as to where to go next, but the clues were all based around the rock bands that they had been impersonating. So they had a little bit of rock music history, but the main aim was to get to know the school building. Designing a CD case, actually designing a guitar in craft design technology, using graphics packages to put all that together. They did a rock drama and rock dance. So what do you look like when you're a rock star? What kind of stances do you need to take? What kind of dances do you have to do? You'll notice here that these are all boys dancing. And the girl is a sixth former who has set up her own dance school since this, teaching younger kids how to dance. So she was showing them how you do rock dancing, that it's not all about moshing, but actually you can do some cool stuff. Some of the teachers should have gone along to that as well for the end of year discos. Meet the band. So the band has lots of real, the school has lots of real school bands. One of the criticisms of Guitar Hero is it encourages people to spend hours learning how to play a plastic guitar. So we made sure that they learned how to use a real guitar and learned how to play at least one song on a real guitar. iTunes challenge, lots of opportunity for display work. Now there's a context for learning that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of. On top of that, they did things like designing the tour. So if you take your band on tour, where are you going to go? So you had to go to Google Earth and examine cities to find out where the big stadia were. You had to then look up the websites, find out how much all that would cost, how much it cost to take a band travelling around to all these venues. So you can turn it to pretty much anything your imagination takes you to. You can turn it into a business enterprise exercise. You can turn it into an art and design exercise. You can turn it into a music exercise. Whatever takes your fancy. But the context is in their language. It's in a computer game that they understand. Just move on. Another one is this. Just take a look at this passage. Put your hands up if you notice something special about the classroom. Shout it out if you can. The walls. Pretty typical in a primary school in Scotland. Anything else you notice? Small gates. Oh, the fudge. What was that? More than one adult. So we've got classroom assistants and parents in there, taking part in the learning. That's something else that's a bit extraordinary. They're using their own Nintendo DSs. They're playing a game called Nintendogs. She's currently training her dog, or combing it, I'm not sure which one. What they did is set up businesses. I'm just going to pause the video if I can. There we go. My computer's gone all strange on me since arriving in Shanghai. I think it's the time difference. There we go. They played Nintendogs. Nintendogs, it's a dog training game. So you have one dog, at the beginning. You have to train it, get it fit, feed it so it doesn't die. I've found that primary school kids have this huge preoccupation with their animals dying. They've obviously had experiences of losing hamsters and things, so they're very keen to make sure you feed it. You have to buy it clothes if you want it to look pretty to win the competition. And then you have to decide what you do with the money. These are six-year-olds playing the game. And the game is the aim of the lesson here is enterprise and collaborative, learning to work with each other. The stickers that they're wearing, you'll see the little rosettes. That's because the parents initially don't really understand necessarily what success looks like when you're playing a computer game. So every time they win a dog competition and make some money, they get a sticker. And obviously the more stickers they get, the more successful their business. And that means that when they go home to mummy and daddy, they can say, look, you know, we made lots of money today. They play the game for a set period of time each day. Funny wee boy who gets very stressed about the dog. Just let this play. So here she's training the dog. They're discussing how they're going to train it better, how they're going to make more money. Telling it where to go. They're getting feedback at the top of the game on how to do better. It's a very, very simple, childish game, if you like. You'll see they've got their pet shops, which is where they can go and play the game. So any time between 9 and 2:45 they can play the game, which is basically the school day. So they wanted the kids to learn about what the school day looked like and how and learn about time. Here you've got the top dogs. And they're the kids that have, you see over in the far left there, top dogs were the kids who had played the game before they came to school. And so they were the top dogs who would teach the others how to play the game properly. So you're not spending too much time on that. Now, how is this used? There's a second little video. The audio is not great, so you'll have to tune in, but the stories are good. Doing their
selling dogs.
Dolls.
Dolls. Oh, what are you selling dolls for? Oh, okay.
It's a baby.
You're not selling the tissue box. Why are you not selling? Why are you not selling the tissue box? Ah. Okay. So you get. So if you sell stuff.
So basically, they're saying we're not going to sell the tissue box. Because you need to blow the nose of the dog. If the dog's got a runny nose, it won't win anything at the competitions. And of course, the adult is completely lost and kind of like, okay. That kind of, okay that we tell children when we don't have a clue what they're talking about. But look as the interview continues.
You get money. And what do you do with the money? So you have like you're running a business. And are you doing well? Are you rich? And is that the game? So you're all working together, like you all own the business. Okay, let me see what you're doing.
We're feeding it to get a discount position.
Text is right. There's something very important. You didn't hear it, maybe. The audio is not great. But the kids are, they were counting the money they had. They said, we've got £362. They're 6 years old, and they're not reading 362 off the screen. They've added it up. They've added it up in their head and worked out they've got £362 to spend. How many six-year-olds do you know who can do that with ease? Very few. And so what the game has made them do, because you can't win the game unless you know how much money you've got, the game has made them learn how to count up effectively, quickly, in their brain. So it was a lovely little context, though, and you can imagine lots of other things that could go around that. You can make films, do animation, so on and so forth. We're going to do a little classroom observation now, though, of a teacher who is fantastic. And this is a very different kind of game. The game he's using is called MIST. You've maybe heard of MIST before. M-Y-S-T. World's biggest selling CD-ROM. And it's basically a logical game with a story, and you work your way through the narrative, solving little challenges as you go. But the one factor about this game are the graphics. The graphics and the sound are movie-like, incredibly high quality, very immersive. And the third thing that teachers like about this game is it's very cheap. It's about $15 for one of the CD-ROMs, and you only need one to work it with your class. Now, what I want you to do, this is a... When was the last time you observed a class? Some of you, it might be years. I want you to do this with a professional, critical head on. So with your laptop or with a notepad in front of you, I want you to make notes. Physically do it. Write it or type it. But don't just sit there having ideas, because you'll forget on the minute the video is over. I want you to write down what is traditional in what you're seeing here, what is high-tech and new and different, pedagogically, what's interesting, what do you like? And then the fourth thing is just things you like about that, the way he's doing that lesson, or things you notice. But the first three are quite distinct points. It's a little short clip. It's about 4 minutes long. Volume right up again, please. You'll see some excerpts from the game as well. Volume right up, please.
There's lightning like ink dropped into water. Would you say something like that, Sid? That water's moving.
Okay. I'm just going to take it back when we'll start again. Because I'm hoping my video is not going to jar like that the whole way through. I thought I'd download it to save having problems with broadband. We might not be that lucky. Well, it's not looking good.
I'm good. Dropped into water.
If it does this, I think it's going to. I'll just escape out of that.
Or meta.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Let's see if I can get it to play better from just within here.
I'm good. There's lightning like ink dropped into water. Something like that. See if the way that water's moving. Can anybody give me any similes or metaphors for those? Well, look, the colour of that rock.
I think my computer's really suffering because of the number of things it's been trying to do today, which is a real shame. This link I'm going to put in my blog, I'll put it up top. Edu.blogs.com is the blog to go to, and it will give you a link to this video on YouTube, or you can just search for MIST, M-Y-S-T. And Tim Rylands. Such a shame this video's not working, and now the computer's threatening to seize up. It's the first time that's ever happened. Okay, so it's going crazy. I don't know what it's doing. Basically, what Tim does in his class, the first thing, do you notice where he was sat within the classroom? He was like the pilot, but sat with the class rather than out in front with them. Second thing that he does is he has one laptop or one Bluetooth wireless keyboard, and he plays this game with the superb graphics. If you like, he's playing it for his kids. But he's asking them all the time, leading questions. So the question-asking skill of a teacher is hard to ignore. That by asking open, leading questions, he's able to get students to think about, hypothesize about what they're going to do, where they're going to go. And he doesn't use the word click or shall we open this in a kind of computer fashion. He talks about shall we walk through the door? Shall we go into this room? And the children, in the meantime, are writing, writing, writing. You might have noticed that. When the as the video was playing, it froze on one of a set of boys writing away. So as the class goes on, students are constantly writing, coming up with their own ideas, stealing each other's, shouting out their best ideas. Tim's job, if you like, is merely as coach and guide. So he'll take them through the world that they're in. And then he'll come to points where he wants to explain grammar, for example. He's a real grammarian. So he'll explain the importance of grammar by using some of the written text that's actually hidden within the game. You see the setup there, and you see that all around, people are writing. Is anyone disengaged in that class? Not at all. And he'll do this for an hour at a time, which is, the pace is much slower than we would be told is any good. You'll notice every kid's got paper. And there's a big debate about would you have kids write this on paper or type it on a laptop? What do you think the best answer would be? What would you do? Whatever they feel comfortable with. Well, the one thing he says is he actually likes them writing it down, because most kids don't have fast enough typing skills to scribble, if there's such a word for typing, scribble their ideas down. So he prefers them to use paper, and it is messy and they score things out, but it's quicker for them than doing it on word processor. The other thing about word processing, he was saying, is when you type your paragraph and you make a mistake, what do you do with it immediately? You correct it. And that stops you having the flow that you need to get through an entire paragraph of creative thought, if you like, through the stuff that you're seeing up there and you translating that into words on your page. Whereas if you make a mistake in writing, you score it and carry on, or you just leave it there and worry about it later on. So it's low tech or no tech almost. It's quite traditional as well, in that they are sat in rows and they are all looking at a board. But each individual student is interpreting what's on the board in their own way in order to build up a story. Now, what I can do is actually take you on to some of the stuff that they've produced. I really don't want to have to restart my machine in mid-talk. And the writing that they've produced comes, if you look at it on the blog, and the other thing is they do publish their writing in midway through the process on the blog, so you can see what they're doing. You'll see it comes in very short, sharp chunks. It's not coming in huge screeds. It's not a finished essay. What they want to do is put up little pieces of writing to show off what they're able to do. So one such example is here, where we can see these little paragraphs here are what some students have produced. So these are grade 6. Standing here, looking out across a rigid landscape, a bird soars, circling above me as if it is a whisk swirling round and round in a mixing bowl. There are rocks that are dagger-like, screwing into the rusty, dusty ground, ready to stab its prey. To the left, I see a rough rock dinosaur searching vigorously with its leg in the ground. But what could possibly be over those mounds of knives? Grade 6. It's good writing, isn't it? And that's based on the opening scene, which lasts about 2 seconds. But they've paused on that and they've looked at how you describe it. He concentrates a lot on getting them to use adjectives and to think about how things feel. So when he went to this school, special school, the students were not going to be able to express themselves in the same way as that kid there. So what he did instead was multisensory. Mist is quite often in mountainous regions, very dry regions, or next to the coast with lots of water and beaches. If I ask you, though, what does sand feel like? What do you, as educated degree professionals, say to me? Grainy? Gritty? It's not easy to come up with lots and lots of different ways of saying it. What about water? Seawater? What do most kids say the water was? Wet. It depends on your class, obviously. But the minute you bring in lots of different types of water, so let's have some water that's been outside all day in the sun. Let's have some water with seaweed in it, so it's all kind of gloopy and slimy. Let's have some water with ice in it, icy cold water. And then we start talking about, okay, we're not going to say icy because it's ice in it. So we're going to go into other words. So we can use tools like a thesaurus. You may have come across something like VisuWords before. VisuWords is a lovely visual thesaurus. So all you do is you type in the word that you're looking for. So let's put in cold. For cold water. And it'll go off. You'll see here, that just in case it tells me it's not available because of the connection speed, the little balls there represent the type of word that we're looking at, whether it's a noun, if it's blue, green if it's verb, adjectives, which we obviously need for this, in kind of ambery orange colour. And it will show you the links between the words. So it'll tell you words that are similar to or pertain to the word you were looking for in the first place. And what's nice about it is the fact it's visual. It's not a complex list of words with no context provided. It really uses the fact that Flash is quite an immersive environment to present the words to you. Have you been having problems with the web all day as well? Is it not? It's not just me. I'm worried. I'll just leave that there for the minute. I'm going to go back to punctuation in the meantime. Hopefully something will appear there soon. He uses this. Every primary school teacher I've met in the UK has heard of the punctuation pyramid, and in other countries nobody's heard of it. The punctuation pyramid is a way of turning punctuation into a game. So what level are you on? Can you write a sentence or a paragraph that's got, like level 3, a full stop, question mark, comma, and an exclamation mark? Who's on level 5? Who can tell me, you know, what is a colon? How would you use it effectively? So over the course, as you build up a piece of writing, obviously when you write one sentence, you're only on level 1, because you're only going to put in a full stop. But what happens as you move on and upwards? So you're able to come up with even game-like ways to look at quite traditional topics like punctuation. Here is our map of cold. So all of these are words to do with cold. The adjectives are the ones we're interested in. So frigorific. The water was frigorific. I don't know if it's the right word, but we could do chilly, parky, bleak. We've got a Shakespearean word there. I don't know if that how you pronounce that, acold or acold. We've got things that are moth-eaten and dusty colds, different kind of colds from what we're meaning, but you can also learn new meanings of words. And then you've got nouns and related words, so hotness, heat. So if you want to go and explore the opposites, then you can go and do that quite easily. So VisuWords is a nice way to, again, help students get to grips with it. You do not need one-to-one to be able to use this. You can do what I do, which is one clapped-out Dell in the corner that's used as kind of the carousel activity. If you want to go and find an alternative word, go there, type it in. The important thing is to do something with those words. In a no-tech way, it could be writing them on a whiteboard and then taking a digital photograph at the end of the day in case an overzealous cleaner comes in and removes all the vocabulary of the kids. Or you could use an interactive whiteboard that they write it up on and save the sheet. Or you could use a wiki or a Google Doc to put all those words together. And then the class bring their own thesaurus together, talking about the writing. And we've seen teachers use this in quite ingenious ways. This, Kim Perico is a teacher based in Australia. Now, when I blogged the idea of using a game called Samarost earlier last year, I wasn't teaching a class at the time. But I had an idea that could be used. She picked up on it, and she created an entire unit of work out of this game, Samarost. And Samarost is a bit like Myst in that the graphics are very rich, but it's a much simpler game, and it's free online. And she applied Edward de Bono's six thinking hats to the game to help her students think about the game. So she had the white hat, where they look at just the facts of the game. What is the game presenting to us? So remember that games there's a lot to games, but games can often be narratives, stories. So they looked at the plot, the characterization at the beginning, the sense of location that you have when you go into a game. They talked about the problem, the part of the story where a problem appears or a challenge appears that you as the player have to resolve. They talked about the introductory scene, separate from everything else. How does that set up the story? How does that set up the game? And if you like, they're really treating the game as a piece of literature that they are examining critically. The red hat, what feelings and emotions do they have about using games or using that game as something for their creative writing? The black hat, the negative parts. So in one of the games, Samaros 1, there's a bit of a pipe-smoking element at the beginning, and it's not a traditional pipe, if you understand. It's an alternative pipe. So that's potentially a reason not to use the game. They saw it as a way to discuss drugs education. Yellow hat, positives and optimism. So the students felt it could become part of the story they were writing. It became a first-person, it was a first-person game, so it became a first-person piece of writing. People who found it too difficult to write, so in particular special needs students, were able to make superb drawings representing the environments they were looking at, or putting a twist on them. Really good for English as a second language students. In her experience, an early ESL learner wrote one sentence with difficulty in the first day, three sentences in the second day, and half a page in the third session. Now, why is an ESL student able to do that? Because the environment's so rich, the context is rich. There is plenty to describe within that context. As a French teacher, though, getting students to write about the city they come from, it's a different kettle of fish. So describe the city you live in. Well, mine was Musselburgh, say cool. Musselburgh is not cool by any stretch of their imagination, but it was the easiest thing to say. And they write pretty stagnant, unimaginative writing. Using the game, they can pretend that they are living in a completely different universe, different planet. Creative ideas and alternatives. So you'll never finish a whole game when you're playing it in class, especially if you're a secondary school teacher working with quite tight periods. So the what happens next question is the most important one. What happened next? What could happen next? What would you do? So plenty more writing opportunities there. And above all, thinking about thinking, the blue hat. So what did you learn? How do you know you've learned it? And what do you think you want to do next? And by using those hats, she was able to provide quite a nice structure, a scaffolding around the use of the game. She put up some great work that the kids have been doing, but here they're talking about, they're inferring what they think is in the game. So I thought there might be a secret message. If I did that, what would happen next? So there's lots of critical thinking and question asking going on. The actual writing is superb, short and sharp, because they're building it up bit by bit. Drifting through the silence and blackness of outer space, the mysterious planet sways through the bright lights of the stars. Again, they're about grade 5, grade 6, writing incredibly well, using some vocabulary that you wouldn't normally hear a kid using if they were describing, say, where they come from. And when the finished article's done, what's nice here, they've done it by hand. They've written it by hand, but it is published online. And the reason for publishing is to give it an audience so that people, whether it's the parents, whether it's peers, whether it's other teachers, can go there and read and view the illustrations that they've done and leave a comment afterwards. If you want to find out more about gaming and you want to see the videos that didn't quite work today, top right of my blog is this blog post, Thinking Out of the Xbox, Gaming to Expand Horizons. And it is absolutely packed with links, videos, the games themselves that you can go and play. And you can go and have a little explore of that in your own time. You might want to do that now. You might want to go and play a game instead of coming to discuss it. You might want to go and view the videos. It talks about Dr. Kawashima. It gives you links to the Consolarium, which is the Learning and Teaching Scotland Centre for Gaming and Learning, which will be publishing those results of Dr. Kawashima's brain training next week. You've got the punctuation pyramid there. You've got the videos embedded. So if you want to create a little workshop yourself to maybe take the idea of using games for creative writing back to the classroom, you could use that as a framework for doing so. What I'm going to... time is up. I hope there's some food for thought there. And I apologise for the videos not working. Normally they go no problem when they're offline. Are there any immediate questions or points you'd like to raise? I'll take one here, yeah. Sorry, yeah. So the link to the blog is edu.blogs.com. And then the key posts at the top right corner give you the post towards the gaming. There was a question here, I think. At the beginning, it was, purely descriptive. Now, what's interesting is that if you're a kid playing a game and you get lost, you go onto Google and you find the walkthrough or you find the cheat sheet. So a great piece of writing is for the students to write their own cheat sheet for the game that they're playing, for example. So you can do some transactional writing in writing the walkthrough for a particular episode. You can do descriptive writing, which is merely describing what's up there. But what these kids were doing is taking that a stage further and using it as a stimulus for their own creative writing. So they were inventing scenarios around what it was they were seeing. Now, you did it with film studies. When you watched a film before, you did a similar kind of process. Transactional, how did they make the film? Second thing, descriptive, what are you seeing in the film? Third thing, go and write your own scenario, your own piece of creative writing. But the medium here is not film, it's the computer game, something that they have much more affinity with. And arguably, there are more contexts for learning than in films. There was another... Yeah? And simulations are... is another part. I think the release of Spore, which is made by the creators of SimCity, is bringing that back. So people are, you know, playing God, effectively, and coming up with, you know, microbes and turning them into universes. SimCity, I played with my students, and I changed the language to German, and it means that they can then look at places around the town. If you play The Sims in German, then you get every object in the household learnt. While playing the game, and you talk about relationships and jobs and things. So, you know, simulations have been used for a long time, and although they're not specifically educational, they have quite clear educational outcomes. What I've been concentrating on here, actually, is things that maybe at first you would look at and think, that's not educational. But actually, if you look under the bonnet, there's a heck of a lot of scope in there. So my challenge, I guess, is to go to your local game store, take a look at some of the games, ask to play some of them, and see if you can unearth the educational potential in there, or at least a context for learning that might hook the kids. There was one question from down here, yeah. Parents and head teachers. I mean, generally the two groups that are nervous about it are parents and head teachers. Yes, you need to bring parents in from the beginning. Literally bring them in. So at the end of the school day, if it's the kind of school where parents come to collect their kids, encourage them to come in for 5 minutes and explain what it is you're going to do. If kids go home and you know, what did you do at school today? Oh, I played computer games. Then, yeah, you're going to have phone calls, and quite rightly so. But and then trying to explain it in a phone call after the event is a lot harder than having an after-school session, an evening, or even a very quick video that you can put up explaining what it is you're trying to do if parents are not going to come to school. I don't know what kind of schools you work in if parents are able to come to school and are keen to come to school. But yeah, you need to lay the ground in advance. Likewise, with your school managers, you need to think about going through a mini potted version of what we've just done there, which is explaining the principles behind it and pointing out that it is another piece of literature. And if you want extra guidance, if you go onto Scotland's National Curriculum page, the Curriculum for Excellence, go to Literacy and you'll see our National Literacy Guidelines classify computer games as literature. So our schools have to study literature within the context of a computer game at some point. Any questions? I was looking down here asking for questions. Are there a last question from up here? Yeah. Yeah, they're realising it. In October, I mean, they're realising it. Scotland has been the first to use commercial off-the-shelf games at that scale. My colleague Derek Robertson, who's been leading on some of this work, has been asked two or three times now to lead the Nintendo advertising campaign to get parents to buy it, and of course he can't do it. It'd be immoral to. In October, keep your eyes peeled on the blogosphere. I'll be down at the Handheld Learning Conference in London, which is the world's biggest education handheld learning conference. Nintendo are major sponsors of that. Anyone who signed up for the conference got a free Nintendo DS, which beats a memory pen, you know, along with Dr. Kawashima's brain training, because it's probably the easiest game to convince people that gaming's good. And then once you've got them snared on that, then you bring out the other games, bring out Guitar Hero, but it's quite a good way in. You need a way in. So Nintendo are very aware of that, but they don't want it to become something that's schooly, because that would destroy their sales outside school. And actually, it would destroy us as well. The appeal of this is that it is not schooly yet, and the risk is that we kill it by trying to make it so. The minute we assess performance and Dr. Kawashima's brain training with No Child Left Behind criteria, you know, the world is over. I'm going to let you go off to other sessions, but we're going to have, in room 408, we'll have a little discussion around whatever you want to discuss in terms of gaming. And there'll be folk who weren't here as well, so it'll be an opportunity maybe to split into small groups if there are enough people there and discuss things in greater detail. If you want to talk about maths and science, if you want to talk about more into English language or foreign language learning, then that's the place to do it. But in the meantime, thank you very much for coming along and bearing with me through the technical difficulties.
Good. There's lightning, lightning.
Now the video works, no problem at all.
Dropped into water. Didn't you say something like that? See if the way that water's moving. Can anybody give me any similes or metaphors for those? Well, look, the colour of that rock.
A white heart.
Streaked with scars like a gaping wound.
This and all Learning 2.08 podcasts are released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Share Alike license. To learn more about the Learning 2.08 conference, visit our website at learning2cn.ning.com.